This is Michael Easley in Context, and today you're hearing a different voice. I'm Hannah Seymour. As you know, or you probably know, Michael Easley is usually in the driver's seat, but today we're turning the tables again.
You like this, don't you?
Well, yeah. I do like being in control, but also, listen, I will say, I feel like I've been reluctant and hesitant and careful to insert myself into In Context,
careful.
But the people have spoken,
yes,
and
they
we
have.
Always get great response, and I think 90% of it is that it's Michael Easley in Context, and they want to hear more Michael Easley. I think when I or
True.
Anyone could be interviewing you, you get more time to speak than when you are interviewing one of our
Fair.
Guests.
But I also got a call just 2-3 days ago from a friend of ours saying, when you and Hannah talk, it's a lot better. Well, they mean it, you know, they love it in the sense of, they don't mean it disrespectfully to the authors, but they love it. And they say,
it's
this
a different
is so,
relationship.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I'm like, oh, okay. I thought you knew me.
This friend calling.
I'm kind of boring, yeah.
No, it's a different relationship. You speaking to someone that you may or may not be friends with.
True.
You're trying to talk about a very specific, I mean, I guess we try to talk about specific content, but the father-daughter
the
relationship
is, yes.
and conversation
well,
is
we
going
hear that
to
a
be
lot.
Different.
We hear it a lot. Yeah. We love the way you yeah. guys, the dynamic, the yeah. interaction. So, yeah. yeah.
So
thank
anyway,
you.
So we thought we'd try this year to pick a few topics where I will join you, Dad, yeah. on In Context and kind of let you talk us through some things, teach us some things. So something that has been coming up a lot in my world, so I selfishly thought, well, let's talk about this on In Context, you know, is this concept of spiritual leadership. If anyone has grown up in the like traditional evangelical church world, we have heard, you know, that the husband is to be the spiritual leader of the home. And so first I want to say, you know, where even is this in scripture? Because, and I know where we're going and I'm excited to go there, but like the term spiritual leader is not in the Bible, correct?
Correct.
Okay. How have we gotten here? Let's unpack this.
Well, you're right. Let's just say quickly, the popularization or common theology, we aggregate. We talked in another program about religion versus a relationship with Christ. Relationship with Christ isn't in the New Testament
sure.
either.
Right.
But it works. It helps us understand the differentiation. When the term spiritual leadership, vision, visioneering, thought leaders, now common traffic in Christian era. It's a way the culture is simplifying a concept. It works for them. It's like our friend Ken Boa when he published his newest book on spiritual formation.
Sure.
And I gave him a bit of a hard time going, why did you, you know, cave to the culture and not just call it discipleship?
Mm.
And he said, sometimes you have to use the language people are willing to hear.
Formation's more interesting today
than discipleship. To get them
to
that place. But he acknowledged, yes, it is discipleship, but that doesn't pull the current culture in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a valid reason for that. But to your point, the evangelical fundamental world has kind of codified this
mm-hmm.
language. Some of it's okay, some of it's not really accurate
yeah.
biblically.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about it. So how do we get there? Where does scripture tell us?
Let's begin at the beginning. Let's
yeah.
go to the Old Testament. Let's go
okay.
to creation of man and woman. 1:26 Genesis, in our image.
Okay.
God created man and woman. Of course, we know the story too well, but he forms everything, you know, from dirt, which is Adam. He calls man Adam. Intentional wordplay. The woman is Ishmael. She's taken from him. She's different than the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have this perfect alignment of a husband and wife, and she is a helper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before the, you know, feminist and, you know, women's
yeah.
rights
before
folks
I start
get upset,
freaking out. Yeah, go ahead.
let me point out a couple of things. Exodus 18, the same word used of her being his helper
yes.
is Moses saying God is a helper.
Yes.
The psalmist, Psalm 22:20, you are my help. 27:29, you have been my help. 63:8, you have been my help. On and on they go. So David will refer to God as his helper. So erase the Western diminutive servant type helper and say, no, he needs help. Now, this is in the garden.
And the perfect.
Prior to the fall.
Yeah.
So we got to look at roles differently, mm-hmm. and I love the word hand in glove. It's a fashioned relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It was not good for man to be alone. I'll make a helper suitable, one who is fashioned
fits
to
him.
Fit him,
mm-hmm.
not just biologically, not just physically,
sure.
emotionally, spiritually. This is a companion.
And together, they are supposed to
they're the image of God.
Obey God and what he's the commission he's given them.
Short-lived.
Yeah.
She, of course, is tempted. She gives to him, he takes and eats. In the curse section of Genesis 3, 2 and 3, the whole storyline, we have to be careful. God does not curse the man or the woman. He curses the serpent. He curses the ground, the context in which they live. The curse has effect on each of them differently. She's going to have pain in childbearing. She's going to want to dominate her husband. He's going to work and sweat and toil, and what was supposed to produce and cultivate and be a worshipful experience is now a labor of thorn and thistle. And there's some deep meaning in all this. This isn't just a garden, you know, trimming the hedges and weeding the garden. This is a picture of life and work are going to be difficult, fraught with trouble, fraught with unintended consequences. The fall affected everything. So now they're, you know, exiled from the garden. I got to believe there's a garden glow right before thing, and then they're pushed out, and it probably lasted a hot minute. Of course, Christ has to make clothing suitable for them. Man can't hide or cover his own sin. God makes a temporary covering for his sin, undoubtedly required a blood sacrifice.
Okay, I was just going to ask that, because I brought that up in a conversation with some friends, and they're like, you think he definitely killed the animals? He could have just, you know, 100%. Sheared them or whatever, and I'm like, it just makes sense that it was a first animal sacrifice, the first blood. This sets us on a trajectory here. Anyway,
and that would have been traumatic however long they were in the garden context, because we have no indication, you know, they were killing and eating animals.
There was
that
no
comes
death.
Later.
Yeah,
that
no
comes
death.
Later.
Noah, is that when
Well, sacrifice is instituted.
No, but I mean when God said now animals are meant for food as well, once Noah's off the boat. Unsure. We've really rabbit trailed on this one already.
I see your point, and there's it's certainly you could say by then it's happening, but I think the sacrificial system, with Cain and Abel are doing something. We don't know the backstory, but you know, one sacrifice was acceptable, one wasn't. And of course, all through these storylines, we have sacrifice. So, and they were to eat part of it and burn part of it, et cetera.
Okay.
And the Levitical law codifies that. But anyway, we digress. So this idea of headship and submission, which we'll talk about more in a moment, it's not really in the same way. It's a patriarchal society. The consequence of Adam, and I think this is overlooked, but he says in chapter 2, because you listen to the voice of your wife, what that's saying is, you didn't trust me.
You didn't listen to God.
I talked to you.
Listen to your helper.
I talked to you before I gave her to you. I told you the plan. I told the day you eat, mote to moot, dying you will die. I told you. You stood right by her. You didn't stop her. And you're complicit. Now, lots of rabbinic and Hebrew scholars, fanciful interpretations of what goes on. I think it's fair to say he loved her so much. He couldn't envision life without her. So he took the apple and ate with her, or whatever the fruit was. We don't know.
The fig. It was a fig.
It could be. We don't know. But the consequence of that, she's going to want to control him. She's going to want to dominate him in this fallen context. And he, which is ironic based on what she did, she usurped authority. She ignored her husband and God's word. Adam had it firsthand. She got it second. She ignores all that, willingly wanting to be like God. He's complicit. He could have said, honey, we're not going to do this. Stop. But we know the storyline. And so in that, he's culpable, but he wants to be with her. And the implication, no matter how you parse it, because you listened to the voice of your wife, this is what's going to happen to you. Now they're out. Now, the good news in chapter 3, verse 1, she's pregnant, and he says God has given her, and the King's English says a man child, you know, she's going to have a son. And that, by the way, is when he relabels her Eve. She's the mother of living, literally. And when you go back to the garden, his job was to name, have dominion over what God brought in front of him. Animals, two by two, he named them. Wasn't a helper suitable. Go to sleep, wake up. Rib surgeries happened. He calls her Eve after the fall. She's just woman. It's ish ma'ish, ish-ish-ah. It's just a Hebrew word for woman. So it's a remarkable storyline. So that sets up. Now, the rest of the Old Testament is a patriarchal society.
Right.
It's the men. That said, we can look at standout women like Abigail.
Sure.
And now we're in the monarchy. Saul is trying to kill David. David's on the run. David's got 600-ish men with him. He comes across a large ranch operation. Nabal, or Nabal, is the owner, and he refuses to help David. He's a fool. His name really, it's an interesting story. His name is Fool. And so David dispatched 10 men, and they go back to David, and David says, okay, 400 of us, take your swords. On the way, this woman comes running out, and she's got food and heads of cheese and wine and loaves of bread, and she...
Smart lady.
Smart lady. I don't want us all to die because my husband's a fool.
Yeah.
And so David's intrigued with her. And later on, of course, Nabal will die, and he will take Abigail as a wife. But it's an interesting picture of men and women were just the same.
Yeah.
In antiquity and today. We struggle, we fight, we have challenges. Even though we have a clearly patriarchal Jewish society, women are highly involved and invested. Mm-hmm. We do have standouts in the storyline, Deborah, different heroes of the faith, we might call them. But by the time you come to the New Testament, this changes drastically. Mm-hmm. Christ is talking to a woman at the well.
Yeah.
What? You're talking to a Samaritan and a woman? Jews don't do this. So Jesus turns this thing on its head. He's a rabbi. He's a rabbi's rabbi, mm-hmm. unmatched. His view of Gentiles, of women, mm-hmm. of lepers, throwaway people, turns the whole Judaistic system on its head. So what probably was intended to be a good relational dynamic between husband and wife and household, the patriarch ruled and reigned. There are no female kings, no female apostles.
But certainly female disciples. Women were certainly in the group that traveled and listened to him teach. And I mean, Mary, Martha, we know.
And Mary and Martha is the next stop because these are his close friends.
Yeah.
And they helped Jesus. And Joanna is in the background. And research from Josephus and others have argued she was a very wealthy business person. Mm. And so it's not as though there's no women in the spiritual leadership dynamic and men and women's roles, but we fell and we fell far. Mm-hmm. And the role conflict continues until this day, whether it's complementarian, egalitarian, what your view of headship mm-hmm. and submission might mm-hmm. be. At the end of the day, we mucked it up.
Yep.
And so the attempt to get back to the garden is not going to happen absent Christ's return.
Yeah.
So we limp along, toiling, sweating, pulling weeds, dominating men.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Ephesians 5 says, wives, submit to your husbands. And it says, because the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is head of the church. So first of all, what does that mean, head of the wife?
So headship is hotly debated in two camps on this. One is that he's the source.
The source of life.
The source of life.
And which that feels backwards, right? Shouldn't women be the source of life?
A husband is the head of the wife.
I know, but I just mean women are the source. Eve, she's the mother of the living.
This is the feminist view, not my view.
I understand.
Because they don't like the idea of headship.
Well, yeah, I don't either.
Headship is used. Wayne Grudem did a study of 3,200 and some odd uses of the word extant in all Greek literature. Never once did it mean source. It always meant authority.
Head. Oh, authority. Okay.
General over his minions. Or her minions, if you want. So it's submission to authority.
Funny that they would say source of life.
Yep.
Okay.
So the argument in my day, which became the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood or the Council for Equality, the two egalitarian, men and women are equal in all respects, the complementarian, equal value, distinct role.
Sure.
That was a huge issue in the early 80s. The Danvers Statement, which we can put on the show notes if people want to look at it, is a wonderful document. The usual suspects, you know, MacArthur, Walvoord, R.C. Sproul, all of them were supportive mm-hmm. of the Danvers Statement, and it's still a very good document of mm-hmm. differentiating the way the more liberal feminist, so-called evangelical feminists, as mm-hmm. Wayne Grudem wrote a book on that, have kind of taken those verses and twisted them. I think it was Grudem also who said, we won the theological war, but lost the battle in the churches. I could have misquoted that, but that was the sense of it. So the idea, let's talk about this passage, albeit briefly. The overarching principle, the way we count verses, 3 to women, the rest to men.
Right.
So 6, if you want to count the whole chapter, 9 verses are directed to the man.
Yep.
So it leads with, be submissive to your husbands. But when it comes to the male's responsibility, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Hard stop. Sacrifice.
Yeah.
The whole challenge of love is others, not self.
Yeah.
And this is where the culture is really confused.
Right.
We love ourselves. The idea of Christ, He loved the church and died for her. Mm-hmm. He took the blame. He died on Calvary. He didn't say, Father, it's all their fault. He said, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And so if that's our example, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So when you teach on submission and headship, I think those are responses, not roles. Mm-hmm. And I get in trouble for this, but I'm convinced that's what the text says. If submission is a role, all you should ever do is say, yes, honey.
Right.
Yes, Tyler.
Right.
Yes, dear.
If only in
yes.
his wildest dreams. Yeah.
Not really. It'd be a disaster. But the point is, that's not a role.
Yeah.
That's a response.
Yeah.
Now, if we hold pause on submission as a response,
right.
what's the husband's role?
Right.
Dying sacrificial
to self.
Love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sacrificial love. Now, if you show me a guy who's sacrificially loving his wife, I'll show you a woman that in general principle does not have a hard time following
yeah.
and loving and respecting him, which, by the way, we also overlooked the last verse of that whole exhortation that you're to love and respect one another.
Right. Yes.
So this lording over, which Jesus even accuses, don't lord over like the Gentiles mm-hmm. do. So Jesus turned the apple cart on its head. So spiritual leadership in the home is very clear in the New Testament. We can't go to this is spiritual leadership. You've got to do some homework,
yeah.
popular theology, to stitch it together. Mm-hmm. But you've got a relationship. Now, if you put Ephesians 5 back to this fashioning together, you've got the New Testament solution to the fall. Because now that the relationships are ruined, she wants to control him, dominate him, correct him, mm-hmm. nag him in contemporary mm-hmm. terms. He doesn't want to deal with her. He doesn't want to take care of her. He doesn't want the conflict with her. Mm-hmm. So he withdraws. He's got to work like the devil in all areas of life. So love and respect come back into play. Do you love her the way I love the church?
Mm-hmm.
That's your job. That's your role. Love your wife like I love the church. What's your role? Your role is to love and respect your husband
mm-hmm.
as an authority, the authority in the home. Now, if I'm sacrificially loving Cindy, am I going to be authoritative?
I would hope not.
Hope not.
Yeah.
And if you know your mom very well, that would not end well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of off in the weeds, but I think back to your overarching question, spiritual leadership is an important topic. Can we change it to discipleship? Can mm-hmm. we talk about the mandates of Christ? Can we talk about dying to self? Authority is Christ is the head of the mm-hmm. church, not my husband.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's the other part of that passage is missed. They talk about mutual submission a lot, the
yep.
so-called egalitarians. And I come to the one where it says to Christ and his church. Is Christ submissive to his church?
No, I don't think so.
So what do you do with the six explanations of what submission means? It's always authority to something else.
Yeah.
Now, the one in authority is not told to be authoritative.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's told to be loving
yeah.
and sacrificial
mm-hmm.
and think about the leadership needs to think about others, which is why J. Oswald Sanders' little book, Servant Leadership, sold 5 million copies over the
right.
years. This is a wonderful little book that says what does servant leadership look like?
Mm-hmm.
You're not the boss.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the head. Now, are there times when you better step into that? Yes.
Sure.
But they better be precious few and with very clear direction. And
mm-hmm.
your mom's and my relationship, there's been 4 or 5 times I've said no to something. I mean, just categorically no.
Mm-hmm.
I don't play that card often, but no, there's a bigger thing here.
No dog.
I know you. Yeah. Well, no dog. Yeah. That's a cheap one, but you're right. And I'm still glad I said no to that. And you like the same thing. So don't give me a hard time. Your sister, not so much. But at the end of the day, you know, this isn't the right decision here.
Yeah.
Now, you don't play that card or trump card.
Right.
It's something deep inside you. It's not selfish or angry, but no, for the good of the family,
yeah.
no.
Yeah.
Now, that's very rare.
Yeah. So why do we say, you know, we're refashioning the word leadership a little bit? Because I think some things I've been reading and pondering, you know, leadership, a lot of times we do think of the one power, control, authority,
sure.
decision maker,
money, vision, power.
You know, and it's like, okay, this is what leadership can mean in one context, but that's not necessarily what it's meaning here. What I hear more
right.
of a servant leadership. You're dying to self, you're sacrificing. But why do we say spiritual leadership?
Yeah.
Like, why are we using that adjective?
It's a contrived, it's a popular theology, contemporary theology. I read 100+ books on leadership when I was working on my
dissertation
thing. I actually started before then, because when I got into a local church, I realized I kind of knew how to study and teach the Bible, maybe. I had no clue about leadership and leading
yeah.
a church.
Yeah.
And this didn't.
Two different jobs.
Yeah. And so what do? I get some books and yeah. start reading. Literally 100 plus, and I kind of lost count. After a while, you start trending in themes. You go, okay, I got the broad stroke of the arguments here. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of definitions about Christian leadership. Mm-hmm. So I hazarded an attempt, and I wrote it a little definition, and we'll put it in the show notes. Leadership is the process of influencing people toward godly practices and principles. So thinking and doing through biblical wisdom as demonstrated by attitude, activity, and ability. It's the process of influencing people. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about leadership as a concept, not loving sacrificial,
yeah.
which we'll come back to, you're influencing people. You don't lead yeah. a machine.
Right.
You influence people toward godly principles and practices. Mm-hmm. What I think about and what I do toward those things through, which ones do you mm-hmm. get? Biblical wisdom. And that is demonstrated or fleshed out with attitude, how I approach it, activity, mm-hmm. what I do, and ability. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has the ability. So as a leader, that to me was a pretty good, it was an overwhelming concept.
Yeah.
But that was a construct and foundation. And I had that taped in my Bibles and on post-it cards here and there. This is what I'm about. It ain't about me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we put the adjective, you're right, spiritual on it, like Christian education.
Right,
you know,
right, right,
you put
right.
the adjective right. on there, your motivation and your principles, and in this case, your wisdom, come mm-hmm. from the scripture, not man-made business books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, one more like pointed question, then I want to talk about what this looks like practically. Okay. Why do we say head of the home? I don't see that in Ephesians. It just says head of the wife.
Again, I think it's a popularized theology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when your mom and I were with Family Life, we had a section on husband and wife, mother and father, and we used a lot of this language,
mm-hmm.
head of the home,
mm-hmm.
submission. And I pushed back kindly and said, look, these are responses, not mm-hmm. roles.
Mm-hmm.
And as things have gone on, I mean, Emerson Eggerichs wrote a really good conference called Love and Respect,
mm-hmm.
which is the crescendo of Ephesians 5:33,
sure.
you know, love and respect each other. And that's what it boils down to. But there does have to be a head mm-hmm. in any organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so the local church, it should be the Lord, not the senior pastor, mm-hmm. but the senior pastor or elder structure or leadership. They do have to make decisions mm-hmm. and say, no, we're going this way. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. This is who we are. Otherwise, you're not influencing people toward a
yes.
goal.
Yeah.
Okay. It's an easy way to say it, you know, head of the okay. home. And it's not wrong, but in this current culture, it's full of landmines mm-hmm. because women have gotten more and more vocal. It seems like in the social media world, women are killing it with apologetics
mm-hmm.
far more than men.
And it may be that, because I mean, I think you're specifically thinking on Instagram, that may just be a heavier female audience.
Granted.
I don't know.
Good point.
Yeah, I don't know.
But they're doing good work. And yeah. I don't know that 20 years ago, mm-hmm. you'd have seen those outlets because mm-hmm. you've been back to publishing mm-hmm. and trying to navigate, as you well know, the publishing
mm-hmm.
world.
Mm-hmm. Funny anecdote that just popped into my head. So we joke a lot in our house that our 2-year-old, whose name is Easley, not to confuse our listeners, that she is the boss of our home.
She is.
Yes. And we had another family over for dinner the other night, and we're talking about that. And all of us said, Isaac, who's our 6-year-old. I said, Isaac, hey, Isaac, who's the boss of our home? And I was confident he was going to go, Easley. Like, you know, and he goes, Dad. And I mean, this other family was like, we're on the ground. I was like, wow, I can't believe he said that, you know. And they were laughing because they're like, yeah, I think if you asked our son, he'd say, like, depends on the day, you know, like, is it mom, is it dad? Who is the boss in this house? You know,
that's
anyway.
Funny.
But I thought, wow, I don't, you know, I really did not anticipate that out of his mouth.
Well, but if you defer to Tyler from time to time, well, let's see what dad thinks.
Yeah. Well, I do. Or, I kind of pass the
yeah, well,
buck
sure,
off to him.
Sure. Well,
I mean, there's a lot of things they know. I'm like, that's a dad question. I'm not dealing with that. That's dad's decision.
You just define the roles in your house. And you did. When I was a kid, it was Father Knows Best was a TV show.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
that wouldn't last a minute today.
Yeah.
But the idea was there were certain things, and we were actually trained differently that don't do that to your child. Don't say, wait till your father gets home.
Yeah.
Because now they live in fear, and
sure.
you can't handle the dad has to rescue.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in the military, we really learned that. Because if he's deployed,
he's not coming home for 9 months.
Mom's going to wear
you
all the pants.
Just wait.
Yeah. You'll be
you're going to be punished
in
for
the cellar
weeks.
For a month.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Okay, so then what does it practically look like? Men who are listening, they're married, yeah. they've got kids. What does it practically look like for them to do Ephesians 5? Because I was reading an article that was the intended audience was women who are dating. And it was talking about, look for a man who'll be a good spiritual leader of your home. And I'm like, what is this? What does that even mean? You know, I mean, I'm like thinking, okay, I would write, marry someone who you respect their walk with the Lord. Marry someone whose faith challenges you, who,
sure.
you know, who encourages and pushes you on in your own relationship Bingo. With Christ. Like, not like, what? Look for someone who's going to be a good spiritual leader of your home. And maybe this is just, you know, me bucking
yeah.
the evangelical, you know, community you that I've grown up in. I know. It's like I agree with it, but I don't agree with it. Yeah. What does it actually look like for a man to live out Ephesians 5?
Before we answer that, when a man walks in a room, it's different.
Okay.
Like it or not. I can remember many times with you all when your mom and y'all would be wrapped around some axle and I come in and yeah. just my presence
That's
changed
true, my home.
Things. Yeah. I mean, I did yell and I did a lot of exasperation of you all as every father does. In fact, I was thinking about that driving over here this morning. Interestingly, Paul, who's not a father or a parent, tells them, don't exasperate your children.
Yes. Yes.
It's a time old issue.
He knew.
It's so easy for parents to get exasperated by, you know, wiggly, yeah. squiggly, disobedient, yeah. loud, crying, fussing, meltdown children. Don't exasperate them.
And anyway. I, time out, remember you getting mad at us about something. And I was old enough to know that verse, but I said, Dad, it says don't exacerbate your children. And you about fell out. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I thought that's what the Bible said, Dad.
Moving on. Yeah. It's an age-old problem, but we used to tell the story in Family Life about this African area that was preserving elephants, a reserve, and as the young male elephants were coming into their bull stage, they were tearing up property and harassing the older female bulls, and they were trying all these things. Finally, I think it was a British group that was operating it, they asked this old African who was working with this reserve, and he says, you need a bull. And they literally had to fly one in from some other country. And they brought, because it's a species thing, right? And they brought this particular bull in and dropped him in the reserve. And they said within hours, they literally saw airborne young bulls where he'd flipped them with a tusk and pushed them around and stopped them from misbehaving. And in a matter of a few days, all was quiet in the reserve.
Peace in the land.
Yeah, because it was a bull. Now, he didn't have to do that every day to every young buck, every teenager, if you will. But there is something about a man. You don't have to like it. It's true.
Yeah.
Now, are there formidable, capable women who can command leadership yep. in the military and so forth?
Sure.
Sure. But when a man walks in the room, and I think this is part of God's design, which is why I'm also, I understand why women want to be in all walks of life. I want men on the front line. I don't want to have to worry about what might happen to a female soldier who might be captured or wounded. It's just visceral in me. Call me a chauvinist. I don't care. There's something hardwired in me. You don't do that to women. And you can talk about equal rights and equal opportunity and equal pay till the cows come home. If something happens to a woman, I wish a man would get in the way and stop it. And so let's don't completely equilateral this whole thing.
Yeah.
And say all sides are equal to the triangle because there are roles. And on the nurturing side, the admonition is to women.
Totally. Yeah.
So you can't expunge the roles out of Scripture entirely.
Right.
But specifically to your point, I think each household is different. You have gifts. Tyler has gifts. Part of the marriage dance is figuring out the gifting.
Yeah.
Your mom is better with numbers than I ever wanted to be. So she manages the books and the budgets and pays the bills. She likes looking for the... Oh, we didn't, you know, why did we get that bill? I could care less. Pay the dumb thing and go on with life.
Right.
It's good we're different, right? And so at the end of the day, that's the art and wonder and joy of each marriage couple. Now, I've talked in recent months to people our age, and this topic has come up. And I remember the wife saying, oh, when my husband's gone, I stand in for him and I represent his view. That was her perspective on submission.
Like with her kids or like, okay.
And I thought, well, good for you. Good for you. She really would be a traditional submissive woman that he's the head of the home. what your father says goes, mm-hmm. and it's my job mm-hmm. to be his stand-in when mm-hmm. he's not here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what they do privately and how they sort through sure. things, I don't know. Red, blue, car, truck, SUV, vacation. I mean, how they make those decisions, right. I don't know. That's
right.
up to them.
Right.
Your mom and I have, you know, our relationship isn't a paragon of all things mm-hmm. well, but the way we sort through it is she has certain strengths and gifts, and I lean on those.
Mm-hmm.
And I have certain ones, and I think she leans on those. Mm-hmm. And it's a great partnership, friendship, relationship. We
yeah.
we work well together, and we, you know, those are her things, those are my things. And we, after a long time, you learn not to worry about it.
Yeah.
We do it differently.
Yeah.
And as she says, when she says something to me that's a mixed metaphor, and I correct her on it. She goes, I communicated, didn't I? I still got my point across.
Yeah.
We still get our points across.
Yeah.
But we have a different way of doing it.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that's hard, and again, this is something else I was reading, that speaking of a woman in apologetics who's killing it, she wrote something about some of it is, I think, a misunderstanding of the way God has uniquely skilled us versus roles yeah. or responses that God has put in place. And I think this is the heart of why it's really tricky is most of the time, not always, most of the time women are more attuned relationally. They're going to pursue relationships. They're going to be thinking, you know, we know women are the ones, families go to church because moms take their families yeah. to church. Women are the ones in Bible studies. Women are the ones wanting to be in a community group or small group of church. It seems that women are more geared towards wanting to do these things. Women are the ones that go on Amazon to buy the devotional to do with their kids. And the more, you know,
yeah.
we should have a family worship time around the table twice yeah. a week. So mom's going to buy the book, you know. So then it's like, well, then is she being the spiritual leader of the home?
Yeah.
Or so talk to that a little bit, because certainly you wouldn't say, well, then you just shouldn't do any of those things, you know, just wait around for
sure.
your husband to disciple your kids. Like,
it's a sad but accurate assessment. Men are not engaged in the spiritual life. In most homes, you're right. And especially in good, solid churches, it's the women who are driving the thing.
Yeah, they're running everything.
And you know, I learned many, many years ago when we were sorting through women, because churches, a lot of churches have women elders and women deacons, and that's fine. But I said pejoratively, the reason that God did not have women elders and women senior pastors is if he did, there'd be no men in church.
Totally. Totally.
They would never go to church. Practically speaking, the home. So your mom and I, she would have liked family devotions. And
yeah.
she talked to me a lot about that. Now, we had disparate ages. That's not an excuse. That's our reality.
Yeah.
I know
11 years from top to bottom.
I know some families with 24 kids, and they do it perfectly. And
they're
God
holier.
Bless them.
Yeah.
They are holier. They're yeah. smarter and better. Each family is like a fingerprint. It's unique.
Yeah.
So don't try to be somebody you're not. What we did was divided and conquered,
mm-hmm.
and we read to you all every night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my commitment. And I worked really hard reading with all of you. Of course, you advanced as a reader quickly. Some of the kids, they liked listening more than like reading a book.
Jumping on the bed while you read
yep,
the book.
Yep. It was, we called it aerobic devotionals with one child, but you had to keep her involved. But at the end of the day, I think presence and time, not quality, quantity, is more important than some of these wonderful things like a family devotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can remember trying some of them with y'all with creative stuff, and it was a fight. It was a huge fight.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And a couple of kids were, you know, they didn't want to do it, and they didn't care about listening mm-hmm. to stories. So for us, it was more trying to figure out each child and how to best train and get you on your way to knowing Christ mm-hmm. and discipling you. Because to me, discipleship was always the outcome and, you know, helping you know Christ, not just we got to check this box.
Yeah.
Now, back to the woman. Don't nag him.
Yeah.
Ask.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom, I just talked about this, and I said, how did you do this with me? Because I don't remember things. And she said, I would talk about we need.
Oh, we need to do this.
We need this. You know, Devin needs this. Hannah needs this. And she'd plant the idea.
Mm-hmm.
She never nagged me.
Like, maybe Hannah needs some, you know.
Right.
Might be good for you and Hannah.
Well,
to
even like when
go
y'all
to
were,
breakfast together.
Well, and that was, but I love
your
that.
Idea.
I
yeah.
love that. That was Saturdays. I try to take each one of you because I always believed one-on-one time, undivided attention was the best parenting tool.
Totally. I literally just read that in a book that oftentimes parents overemphasize family time. We should have a family, you know, game yep. night every Friday night, family whatever, and they're like, it's fine. You know, I'm not telling you don't do it, but your kids they're not going to remember family time. Right. They're going to remember one-on-one time.
Well, and Floyd Sharp always said, don't worry about all that. Just make memories. Try to make a memory with that kid. And so that's why we were at every soccer game that Jesse ever played and Devin played. And, you know, when Sarah was riding horses, we were out there, you know, watching her ride the horse in training. And it was like, you want to be involved. And I think if you're going to have kids, you got to invest the relational capital so that they know they're important. We've all seen an out of control child in a store and a mother at her wit's end. Or the ones that intrigue me are the ones that just don't do anything. And the child's just unbridled. And I think God judges me. Everywhere I go, that happens.
They're following you around.
They are. I go to Costco, no one's there. And there's one screaming kid. I'm like, okay, Lord, what did I do wrong?
I'm like, that woman's amazing. Because I'm like, we're out of here. I can't handle this. I'm not torturing these other people. But
your mother left full shopping cart more than once.
Yeah, I've done it.
Out the door.
I've only done it once. But we have things called like grocery delivery today. So, yeah. So it doesn't happen to me very often.
You leave them on the door longer.
Yeah.
But I think each of us stands before Christ alone. How are you responsible for your role as a mom, your role as a dad? You can make dads feel really guilty really quickly, but guilt won't change their behavior.
Yeah.
It's got to be something that they determine before the Lord, heart and head. I want to pursue this child. My memories of my parents, you know, were my dad and I were always working on a project, always doing something, trimming, raking, painting, fixing. You know, I tried to do that with you all, lesser and greater opportunities.
Yeah.
Whenever I went to Home Depot, anybody want to go?
Yeah.
You know, some did, some didn't. You just tried different things to dial in what worked with that kid. At the end of the day, you know, your kids, the exasperating years, the exhausting years, you have to get a longer view on that going, this will pass.
Yeah.
This will pass. Am I related to that child? Am I engaged, undivided attention? Will they remember it? Probably not.
Yeah.
But there's a cumulative effect. Mm-hmm. I got mom's attention. Mm-hmm. I got dad's attention. And your mom was always great of goading me gently without nagging. You know, I'm concerned about this with Hannah or Jesse or whoever it was. We need to think about that. And more for her, it was opportunities. Was it music? Was it sports? Was it a camp? Was it a retreat? Was it a missions trip? And I think most moms are, that's a nurturing.
That's their world. I mean,
usually they're the biblical ones
that are home.
That's the nurturing. And I do think it falls to dad in that respect to be sort of this solid fixture in the home that dad is keeping us on track. Dad's working, not every place, but a lot of places. Dad's still the primary breadwinner.
Yeah.
Dad has a lot going on with an 8-9 hour day where his head's not home. Mm-hmm. Trying to turn that to come home and be a husband and a father, and he's exhausted and he wants to eat and sit and have some selfish time. It's exhausting when your children are younger. Mm-hmm. And you know, as your mom and I look at the decades, you guys are in a very different universe than we ever had opportunity for. Mm. I remember my parents saying similar things. You know, there was no technology. There were three channels on the TV. There was PBS if you had a good UHF channel. And that was it. Mm-hmm. You read, you worked, you cleaned up. Mm-hmm. Cooking was a lot more involved process. Microwaves weren't even out.
Yep.
So it's a different time and culture. It's not right or wrong. It's just different. You guys are in a different world.
Yeah.
Technology is so much a part of your lives.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's kind of frightening.
It's killing us, I think.
It's kind of frightening. But we all have, you know, a context. And so do your kids know that mom is 100% engaged? Mm-hmm. When I'm with them, they know Tyler, my daddy, is engaged with me 100%. And that's hard.
Well, and I'd say to myself and everyone in my season, I mean, the difference, that was still a question for you, but I have an iPhone in my hand that a lot of times I'm looking at and not my child. Yep. And this was something that I was very convicted of a little over a year ago. And I've changed a lot of my practices, but that is something I think that my generation, who's currently parenting, is like,
we have got to
figure this out because we are paying more attention to our phones than our children.
They know it. I go to a restaurant. Oh, it's all they know. It's all they know.
Yeah.
I go to a restaurant and you watch a family eat and the mom and dad are on their phones and the kids are, you know, doing whatever they do.
Yeah.
Again, it's a different culture, not to just, you know, diss everybody, but the dopamine.
Right.
The dopamine we get from our hits on our phone, it's like biting fingernails, as my dentist told me. It's the same function. And so we're getting these dopamine hits. And it does take almost a detox to put the thing down, put the ringer off, that's one thing I've really enjoyed this season of my life, because I'm not as busy as I once was. Yeah. And I don't have to pick that thing up 24/7.
Right.
And in fact, it goes off at certain times of the day and nobody gets through.
Yeah.
Which is could be a problem. It's just like, I don't have to be hardwired connected to a screen.
Yeah.
I mean, the screen generation is all your kids will ever know.
I know. It's terrifying.
Watching your kids pick up a tablet's terrifying.
I saw something the other day that was like, you know, when I asked my kid to get dressed for the day and put on socks and shoes, and they act like they can't do that on their own, but you hand them a tablet, and then it's like Iron Man when he's not Iron Man on Marvel, like it's this whole screen and he's projecting thing, you know, and it's like, yeah, kids are geniuses when you handed them an iPad, but when you ask them to brush their teeth and get ready for bed, they look at you like they're helpless.
I don't want to do that. It'll take 2 minutes.
Like, I know better. Your intelligence is super high. Anyway, we've really digressed. Final thoughts. How do you encourage the man, the woman listening?
Everyone's under-encouraged. Hmm. And encouraging your spouse. You can't over-encourage anybody. And I think husbands and wives, speak well of your spouse in front of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Let them know that dad is first, mom is first, kids are second. The healthiest way for a family structure is to see a healthy mom and dad relationship. The weight of this for a husband is overwhelming, which is why they really need Christ. And you've heard me say this. I don't know constructs and, you know, philosophies. I do know I want other couples that are going in the same direction for the long haul. Other husbands talking about this has more power than a wife telling her husband what she needs or wants. Other wives talking about, how do I encourage my husband? You get around couples where they diss the spouse. My husband, my wife, you don't want to be around those people. Now, if you're loving them for, you know, one reason, but that's not who you want pouring into you. You want to look at other healthy structures, not perfect, that are going in the same directions, intentionally look and listen. And I think that's what your mom and I did. We always looked at other couples that were ahead of us, that were trying to be good parents, good husbands, good wives, good workers in the field. And that's, to me, the body of Christ. That's what the body should be. And that's where the hope comes. And lastly, it's fun. It really is fun. It can lighten your load versus the guilt and the negligence you do feel when you're not being a good husband, wife, mom, dad, and you go, this is kind of cool. I mean, when you get on the floor and you're engaged with PAX, it's the time of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means no to everything else for a minute. But it's hysterical. It's fun. It's educational. Somehow you got a paradigm shift from your identity is not what you do at work. It's not what you do for your neighbors. Your identity is in Christ, and he wants you to be a good mommy and a good daddy. He's giving you everything you need. So take a deep breath. Try to stop being what the social structures are telling you to be and do.
Yeah.
Quit comparing yourself to the ideal Insta post or whatever, and say, you know, this is my family. These are the people God uniquely gave me, and I'm a steward, and I'm going to stand being an account of what kind of father I was, what kind of husband I was. That's pretty chilling.
Did you know that In Context is fully funded by our listeners like you? If you are a regular listener, would you consider giving a one-time or perhaps monthly donation? You can give at michaelincontext.com. In Context is produced by Hannah Seymour, mixed and mastered by Sonomorphic, and music composed by Tycho and Blair Masters.